Hi everyone, thanks for hanging in there. We are officially the last group. So, without further ado, I'm Vesta. This is Dorothy, Ananias, and Kaya. We'll be speaking to you today. We also have Caitlin and Rosemary and Kirstie on that for the question period afterwards. I'd also like to extend a special thank you to our supervisor, Dr. Lynn Feehan, who is also with us today. All right, so a brief overview of our presentation. We're going to talk about the purpose of our systematic review, the introduction, the methods, the results, and then go through the discussion. So the purpose, our purpose, was to systematically review the current evidence and determine whether early mobilization improves physical functional outcomes when compared to immobilization in older adults with upper extremity fractures. I'm going to briefly define upper extremity fracture in relation to our systematic review. Upper extremity fractures are minimal trauma, age-related, or low-energy fractures. These fractures are a precursor for skeletal fragility and lead to an increased risk of all types of subsequent fractures. There are growing health problems with projected increasing incidence as the population ages. In fact, fractures of the humerus, forearm and wrist account for one-third of the total incidence of fractures in older populations. Non-hip and non-vertebral fractures constitute approximately 50% of all low trauma fractures, and in Caucasian women 65 to 85 years of age, osteoporosis is responsible for approximately 7% of distal radius forearm fractures and 50% of all other fractures. It's been documented that osteoporosis is associated with considerable healthcare costs. In 1995, the economic burden of osteoporosis was estimated to be as high as $13.8 billion in the United States. In Europe in 2000, the cost of osteoporotic fractures was estimated at 31.7 billion euros. The burden of upper extremity fractures relates not only to the cost, but also to the associated morbidity and mortality. Mortality has been shown to increase following all major types of fragility fractures, even in minor fractures with older age. Non-hip and non-vertebral fractures are associated with 29% of premature mortality and 40% of all deaths. Hutchinson 2010 noted that within 5 years of an initial non-vertebral fracture, nearly one in five patients sustained a subsequent non-vertebral fracture, and actually one in three died. Given this somewhat grave outlook, you might be wondering how an upper extremity fracture is managed. Well, they can be treated either surgically or non-surgically, depending on the severity and or complexity of the fracture. More clinically complex fractures may be treated surgically with an open reduction and either an internal fixation such as a plate screw or pin, which allows for early motion, or an external fixation such as bridging or non-bridging. A non-bridging external fixation allows for early motion of joints adjacent to the fracture site, whereas a bridging external fixation does not. Less clinically complex fractures, that's a tongue twister, may be treated with a closed reduction along with an additional stabilization or support such as a dynamic splint or a plaster cast. In this situation, a removable sling or elastic bandage allows for early motion, whereas a plaster cast does not. I'm now going to outline what the research states with regards to immobilization post-fracture. So immobilization can decrease the likelihood of displacement after a fracture has been reduced, as well as decrease further tissue damage, pain, and swelling. It can reduce complications such as deformity and functional problems. Immobilization of the injured tissue areas allows healing without extensive scarring and prevents secondary injuries. Boileau in 2001 reported that immobilizing a fracture site until it has healed leads to positive functional results. However, immobilizing a joint also has potential associated consequences, including muscle atrophy, disuse osteoporosis, adhesions, joint stiffness, decreased proprioception and kinesthesia, and long-term functional loss. It's been suggested by Buckwalter that optimal fracture healing appears to require some cyclical loading of the repair tissue, as loading a fracture site stimulates bone formation. Now, with regards to early mobilization, the literature states that early mobilization of upper extremity fracture decreases swelling, muscle atrophy, disuse osteoporosis, osteoporosis, adhesions, joint stiffness, and long-term functional loss. Early mobilization has been shown to regenerate articular cartilage, promote circulation and nutrition to the healing bone, aid in the reduction of edema, and improve soft tissue healing. Many studies have also documented that early mobilization significantly reduces pain in both the short and long term. Feehan in 2004 found that early motion resulted in early recovery of mobility and strength and facilitated an earlier return to work. Millett also in 1995 noted that early active motion is a key factor in decreasing long-term disability and ensuring a more rapid recovery of physical functioning. So why is it important to do this review? Well, recent systematic reviews have looked at early mobilization post-fracture in specific joints such as the proximal humerus, distal radius, and metacarpals. Each review has suggested that there is either inconsistent or insufficient evidence that early motion post an upper extremity fracture may improve short-term physical functional recovery. There is no definitive high-quality evidence to support practice recommendations post upper extremity fracture. This leads us to our review question. Does active motion of joints adjacent to a healing fracture introduced within the first 3 weeks post-fracture improve the quality and rate of physical functional recovery in people 45 years of age with any fracture within the upper extremity when compared to people treated with regional joint immobilization greater than 3 weeks? We presented this in the form of EPOC, which looks at exposure, people, outcome, and comparison. Early motion here refers to the motion within the first 3 weeks post-fracture. With regards to joints adjacent to the healing fracture, an example for the distal radial fracture would be the radial carpal joint. Physical functional recovery is defined as participation and activity, so things like self-care, domestic life, community life, recreation, and leisure. As well, body structure and function, so things like muscle strength, range of motion, and pain. Immobilization is referring to no motion within the first 3 weeks post-fracture. I'm now going to hand you over to Dorothy, who is smoothly going to guide you through the methods of our search.
All right, so I'm just going to go over the search strategy and methods and study selection process, as well as our data analysis process. So we chose four major databases, Cochrane Central Register, CINAHL, MBACE, and Medline. And just for clarity's sake, we chose to look at Google Scholar, Pedro, and OpenSeeker. We did other searches, which included hand searching, all of the references that both included and excluded articles, our personal libraries, as well as the clinical expertise of our supervisor and our community partner, Claire Faulkner at Island Hand Therapy. So just to go through our major search terms, we generalized the search terms according to EPOC, and they were specific for the specific databases with the mesh terms when we put them into the specific databases, but just according to our EPOC, so just exposure, so early or immediate mobilization or motion, exercise, physical therapy, range of motion, hand therapy. According to our people, so aged, middle-aged, aged 80 or over, upper extremity fracture, and all the bones of the upper extremity, including the scapula and the clavicle. The outcomes, so activities of daily living, self-care, treatment outcomes, recovery of function, quality of life, disability evaluation and data collection, and then our comparison group, which was delayed or late mobilization. Within these four categories, we combine them with OR, and then between the four categories, we combine them with AND. Our inclusion criteria were a mean age of 45 or older, upper extremity fracture, the presence of an intervention which compared early mobilization as defined by less than 3 weeks to a conventional or standard of care greater than 3 weeks. Human studies, available in full text, available in English, a randomized control trial or a quasi-randomized control trial. And then our exclusion criteria included, obviously they did not meet the inclusion criteria, they had any pathological fracture other than osteoporosis, and they were taking corticosteroids or chemotherapy drugs which would affect their bone health. So our study selection process was completed in May 2010, and we initially screened based on title and abstract, and that was done by two reviewers, and then any discrepancies were verified by a third reviewer. And then we took our full text, and we had a customized form with our inclusion and exclusion criteria, which was then done by two reviewers and verified by a third, or if no consensus could be reached. So here's a brief overview of our search results. So after an initial screen, we come up with 126 articles. After a title and abstract screening, we were able to eliminate 7 and had 119 to do full text. So with our inclusion and exclusion customized form, we eliminated 104 articles. And some of the reasons for exclusion included no comparison group, wrong study design, and the mean age was too young. So we ended up with 15 studies for qualitative analysis and 10 studies for quantitative analysis. So then we developed a data extraction form, which was based on location of the fracture. So was it a distal radius fracture, was it a proximal femoral fracture? The intervention group, so was it an early group or was it a late group? What was their method of immobilization? So was it a cast or a sling or a fixator? What was their method of mobilization? So was it exercises, a home program, or education? And what outcome measures they used? And what was the mean and the standard deviation of that outcome measure? For example, range of motion, grip strength, or outcome measures such as the SF12. So that was piloted on 7 studies and modified accordingly. It was completed by 1 reviewer, verified by a 2nd reviewer, and a 3rd was brought in if necessary. Next, we underwent our quality assessment tool, which we chose a revised Downs and Black, which has 27 criterion. It has 4 categories of reporting, external validity, internal validity bias, and internal validity confounding, and it has a total score of 28. It was decided that all of our studies that met the inclusion criteria would be included. We would not exclude based on Downs and Black score. So they were then ranked according to levels of evidence, and it was found that they were level 1B and level 2B levels of evidence. So that was, again, on the 15 studies done by 2 reviewers independently and verified by consensus, by discussion. It was found that we had 8 high-quality studies, which was defined as a score of greater than or equal to 21, and a low-quality score was less than or equal to 20, and there were 7 studies. Finally, we did our data analysis, which involved looking at studies with the same outcome measure, and the means were reweighted, which means it accounted for the variation of sample size. Then the scale standardized. So, for example, if a VAS had a line of 10 centimeters for one group and a line of 15 centimeters for another group, they were standardized to one score, and then effect size was calculated using the group means and the standard deviations. Studies with different outcome measures were qualitatively analyzed. So then we chose 3 time intervals in which to look at our data. Less than 12 weeks, 12 to 26 weeks, and greater than 26 weeks. I'm now going to pass it to Anna to discuss our results.
All right, so as Dorothy mentioned, we originally had 126 articles, and after our filtering, we came out with 15 articles to include in our systematic review. So out of those 15 articles, there was an equal balance between quasi-randomized control trials and randomized control trials. Regarding level of evidence from the Oxford scale, we found the level of evidence to be either 1B or 2B. For our population, the number of participants ranged from 38 participants to 120. And finally, regarding the intervention, all studies compare 2 types of interventions, 1 which would promote early mobilization and 1 that would promote later mobilization. So for example, in Avizad again, in 1989, he compared elastic bandage with plaster cast for the distal radius. So obviously, elastic bandage would promote earlier mobility than would the cast. In surgical interventions, such as the Troche 2006, they compared non-bridging versus bridging. Non-bridging, as Jessica mentioned, would allow for earlier mobilization, with bridging promoting later mobilization. And those that had the same type of intervention compared time frames. So where one group of the participants were immobilized for 1 week, another group might be immobilized for 3 weeks. So let's move on to our findings. So from the outcome measurements that we decided to use as our most pertinent one regarding the ICF framework was activity and participation limitation. And there was a very broad category of this throughout the studies. Some studies use SF-12, some use Oxford scale, some constant shoulder. As you can see there, quite a few. Regarding secondary outcomes, body and structure function, we found range of motion, pain, and grip strength to be the ones that we wanted to use. So as Dorothy mentioned, we did two types of analysis. We did a qualitative analysis of the ones that did not provide us with the raw data and could not calculate standard deviation. And we also did a quantitative one, which I'll speak to in a minute. So regarding the qualitative findings, in the category of activity and participation limitation, which was our primary outcome that we were looking for, 5 studies showed that the early motion group had higher scores than that of the late motion group. And these measurements were taken at 6 and 12 weeks. Regarding range of motion, 4 studies showed that the early motion group had higher scores for the range of motion than the late motion group. And these measurements, again, were taken at 6, 9, 12, and 52 weeks. Regarding grip strength, 2 studies showed that the early motion group had greater grip strength than the late. At 6 and 52 weeks, those were measured. And finally, pain showed that 5 studies, the early motion group experienced less pain than the late motion group at 8, 12, and 16 weeks. And I only spoke about the findings that we found that were statistically significant and didn't speak to anything that we didn't find in that regard. So now we wanted to try and do a little more investigation and a little more in-depth comparison. And we thought we could compare the trend over time. So this is what Dorothy was speaking about, where we standardized what we could and weighted what we could and based on their means came up with a bit of a scale. So for example, pain, you can see Dorothy spoke about the follow-up times, which are listed at the bottom. There's 3 times, less than 12 weeks, 12 to 26, and the final time point being greater than 26 weeks. And then on the side is the mean. So with regards to pain, you can see that initially, the early motion group scored a lower score for pain, meaning they had less pain than that of the late motion group, with it equalizing over time and the final time point, the early motion group actually having slightly more pain, but very little difference. Then moving on to grip strength, you can see that the early motion group, again, at the initial time point, showed a trend of having more grip strength initially, but by the final time point, the late motion group achieving a higher score. With regards to flexion, the early motion group had a more consistent finding of a higher score at both the early and the first time point and the last time point. Similar with extension, earlier having a higher range of motion and extension at the first time point, with it equalizing out at the final time point. And finally, our primary outcome of activity and participation limitation, at the initial time point, the early motion group scored a higher score with the equalizing out over time. Okay, so with regards to adverse events, 257 adverse events were reported out of 1,068 participants. Statistically speaking, the balance between both groups was not significant, so both groups experienced a similar amount of adverse events, the most common of which were pin site infection and malunion with the surgical intervention group, and radial and median nerve distribution and paresthesia. And I'm now going to pass it over to Kaya, who's going to make a little more sense of our results.
Okay, so you're probably wondering what all those graphs meant, so we'll just go through some of the findings that we found. To answer the question whether early motion actually does have a benefit on our primary and secondary outcomes. So our primary focus of our review was to look at the benefits of early motion on the activity and participation limitations that older adults experience after an upper extremity fracture. These limitations range from decreased ability to do activities of daily living to participation limitations, which include things like not being able to socialize with friends as often or limiting their involvement in leisure activities or their sports that they did before. So we found that there are differences in opinions and findings that exist on the safety of early motion as an intervention and also on its effectiveness. I will demonstrate the key findings that we found in our review based on 7 studies that looked at surgical interventions, which allowed early motion, and 8 studies that used conservative orthopedic management. So I'll start with our primary focus. Our review found clinically significant findings for early recovery of function in the early motion groups, seen mostly in the conservative orthopedic management studies. And these early recovery findings were seen up to the 12-week post-fracture. So up to all the follow-up times, up to 12 weeks. These studies use removable types of immobilization, like slings or elastic bandages. So the early motion groups were told to remove the device and do active or active assisted range of motion exercises or passive range of motion if they had a specialist there to help them. The one surgical study that showed these same early recovery of activity and participation, they used an open reduction and an internal fixation surgery that allowed early motion. So 1 week postoperatively, they were allowed to move the fracture site, versus the other group had a closed reduction and pin fixation, which did not allow movement for 6 weeks post-op. So talking about our secondary outcomes, which is the body structure and function outcomes of range of motion, grip strength, and pain, we also found similar findings of that early, those early follow-up times showed an increased range of motion, grip strength, decreased pain, up to 12 weeks post-fracture. And these were seen again in the studies that were more conservative management studies, and also in Rosenthal's surgical study, which I just previously described. And also one other study that compared two types of this, or compared the same surgery, but one group was put in a plaster cast for 1 week, and the other group was put in a plaster cast for 6 weeks. So they were able to move earlier and showed the exact same findings. So now that you know all the positive benefits of early motion, we do have to talk about a few of the limitations in our review process. We did not hand search any conference proceedings or investigate ongoing studies. The authors of unpublished studies were not contacted, and English publications were the only studies that we included. Also, there were limitations within the studies themselves, so mostly based on the quality of the studies. So the quality was compromised due to usually it was inadequate or unreported randomization, and also the concealment of treatment allocation. Also, the outcome assessors weren't always blinded in all the studies. Inadequate reporting of standard deviations in 5 out of the 15 of our studies resulted in them not being included in our quantitative analysis. Also, a few studies use non-standardized outcome measures, especially to measure function. So this is where they either developed their own tool, mostly in the older studies, or they either modified an existing tool. And we were unable to conduct a full meta-analysis due to the heterogeneity among the studies. And this was due to different outcome measures or different interventions across the studies. And also they used different follow-up times. Okay, so what can you guys take from this? Well, as we were just demonstrating, the common theme found across these studies is that early motion is safe and effective in improving a person's activity and participation limitations within the first 12 weeks post-fracture. So with this early recovery of activity and participation, these patients can get back to their daily life or get back to work earlier or get back to their leisure activities earlier than the late motion groups. And in regards to adverse events, all the studies determined that there was no difference between the late and early motion groups. So we can safely say that early motion intervention is safe. So with all this, We thought of a few recommendations for future research, and we think there needs to be a focus on one or two common interventions in the study, such as immobilizations with plaster casts versus early motion in a removable sling or another type of device like that. Also, the study should use valid and standardized outcome measures, especially for the activity and participation limitations. So this could be things such as the SF-12 or the DASH. Also, we feel since we found these early recovery findings, we think that there should be more research in comparing how early functional benefits, so within those first 12 weeks post-fracture, how does that translate to earlier return to work so they could measure the number of days it takes them to get back to work, or decrease risk for secondary fractures, or decrease overall healthcare costs. So in conclusion, our review suggests that compared to standard care or immobilization of greater than 3 weeks of an upper extremity fracture, early motion is effective in improving a person's activity and participation, especially within the first 12 weeks of recovery. So that's the end of our presentation. I would like to give a very special thank you to our supervisor, Dr. Lynn Behan, for all of her help and guidance through this process. Also Charlotte Beck, she helped us a lot with our search strategy. And Kieran Bisra, she helped us with our statistics. And Dr. William Miller, who gave us a lot of help with the revised Downs and Black tool.
Thank you very much. Start with questions.
I would like to ask you a few questions about your quantitative analysis and your graphs. I don't know if I missed it, but I don't believe you presented the statistical significance for your between group differences.
Yeah, but more so it was to show a trend, not necessarily effect size. So
not necessarily effect size, but like in your graphs, like for the 12 weeks, visually they look different, but I was just wondering what the statistical significance, if they were statistically different.
That's what I was addressing, is that the effect size is not of high quality, so effect size is similar to statistical significance, just a different way to measure it. And most of our effect sizes are quite low, so while it's not showing an extreme statistical significance, it's nonetheless showing a trend, which is why I said it's showing a trend.
No. Do you like any p-values or?
No, just because we calculate it based on the mean, the standard, we standardize the mean.
So then how do you, sorry, a follow-up question, then how, if there's no way of knowing for sure, because the statistical significance will tell you that difference is because there's a real difference, not due to chance.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how that impacts all your very firm statements that for sure 12 early mobilization is
those
better.
Very firm statements are made based on our qualitative analysis, which have the p-values and the standard the p-values that we can base our assurance.
I just had a quick follow-up to that. You described them as qualitative, statistically significant findings, but we usually use statistically significant findings in conjunction with quantitative. Can you resolve that discrepancy for me?
There was a comparison made between studies. It was just studies that had statistical significance in their own sense were then compared with other studies that had similar outcome measures that they were using. So there was no cross comparison made between the studies. In the qualitative?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Still a little shaky, but we'll go back to
this. I kind of have a related question. I'm just wondering if you could clarify, and I may have just missed it, in the qualitative analysis, you looked at four areas, the four different areas of pain, and you presented the number of studies that showed a positive change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, did all of your studies examine all of those different categories, or was it four out of six showed a positive change, or only four examined pain and they all showed a positive?
For function, all 15 measured some type of function, the activity and activity and participation limitation. But yeah, for pain, it was out of 11, I think, grip strength. Yeah, it wasn't every single, not all 15 studies.
Yeah, so for example, for grip strength, two studies showed a benefit for early motion over late motion. Were those the only two studies that examined that, or were there some studies that did not show a positive?
Yeah, these are just the findings of the positive findings.
That was statistically significant.
That were statistically significant. So we reported on anything that was statistically significant. If it had said that one study said that there was statistically significant findings to show that grip strength was better in the late motion, we would have reported it, but we didn't.
Okay.
This is all that we found. That was
so two out of two statistically significant changes, both were positive.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, and follow up to that. So that did, you didn't report on any of the non-significant findings?
They're not any.
Okay.
No.
Because I was just wondering, like, back to the other analysis, to be sure that it's positive, how, if there was a bunch of findings that said it didn't make a difference, that's, like, were there any findings that had no statistical?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So with the two studies for grip strength, for example, those were the only ones that showed statistical significance. Many did not.
Many showed no statistical significance?
Yes.
So then
they
a lot...
They just didn't report it.
Oh, they didn't... Sorry, that I guess it's the clarifications. I'm not asking if they reported it. I'm asking if they did a statistical analysis and showed that there was no difference between early and late.
Yeah. Most studies did do that analysis.
Yeah.
And many studies showed that there was no statistical significance between groups. So we are just sharing with you the information that is significant. In our paper, we talk about the ones that are not significant.
Sorry, just to clarify on that point, it's like two out of five studies showed significant. Is that what you mean by that? Like, however many studies, or were there only two studies that reported on grip strength?
No, that's what I was, so there's 11 studies that reported on grip strength.
Okay, and only two
found significant findings at all.
Okay, were there 11 studies that reported on pain too? Like, did
pain was hard. It was 14 out of 15 on pain, and 15 out of 15 on function.
Okay, thanks.
I was just curious to know. There's a lot of talk about early mobilization, but no real definition as to what it means, what it is. So across the studies, was there a common kind of definition of what early mobilization meant, or the fact that the person could move was considered early mobilization as opposed to some sort of actual intervention?
Yeah, there was a wide range of definitions for early motion. So it was mostly based on the timeline, but yeah, early motion included things like the surgeon telling them to go home and do light functional activities with that rest sit, or it was go see this certified hand therapist 5 days a week and do exercise, active assisted, passive range of motion exercises. For the shoulder, it was things like pendulum, things like that.
Just to follow up to that, did you guys observe any sort of trend between the type of early mobilization intervention suggested and the significance or any sort of findings? So, say, study that where the surgeon said, okay, go do your functional stuff as opposed to go see a hand therapist for 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You guys observe any sort of differences in the findings in that?
That wasn't really part of our review. We just looked at the overall category for early versus late.
Do you know what the current standard care is for early versus late mobilization with upper extremity fractures, or does it depend on the surgeon as to what they?
It would depend on the surgeon's protocol, and then of course what sort of device they put them in, or what type of surgery they might have, whether they have surgery or not surgery. So, it definitely varies across the spectrum. For the purposes of this systematic review, we did look at immobilization as beyond 3 weeks, at 3 weeks, and early as before that 3 weeks.
Any questions on this side?
See benefits in the first 12 weeks, but then they kind of level off in the future. So I understand, like, if you want to get people back to work, it'd be beneficial to try and get them improving quicker in that 12-week period. But in people that are retired and don't really care about, like, how quickly they want to get back to doing their activities, and they just want to improve in the end, and they don't want to be put through the painful range of motion earlier on, would you recommend not doing
it? I think if I imagine myself as a grandma,
I would want to get back to doing things. I don't think the exercises that they did caused them pain. It just enabled them to get back to their activities of daily living and things that are meaningful for them. Like, imagine if making dinner for your grandkids was really important and you couldn't do that, so they didn't hang out with you, you know? That's how I found it.
Or even their ADLs. It's just a matter of getting back to those earlier without requiring help from, you know, say an OT coming in from the community and that sort of thing. So we're looking at that, your physical function, your daily life, and getting back to that more quickly.
And also one more point to add to that, if I may, that if you have an injury on one part of your body, the rest of your body is affected, and that can lead to more injury, a trip, a fall, if your balance is affected because of your cast, say. So all those factors would promote why you should have earlier function.
I saw that you after 12 weeks it like levels off like you guys talked about. Oh, did any of the studies look at long-term benefits of doing the early mobilization?
Yeah, we had one study who actually did, well, Hodgson's was one of our authors who did a follow-up study 2 years later, and they actually did show increased functional outcomes 2 years post compared to the early or compared to the late motion, but there was no other studies that showed that same result.
Sorry, I think I missed it. I was just wondering, like 12 weeks to 26 weeks, that was post-immobilization. So like the outcomes after 12 weeks, that was 12 weeks after what?
That was after the fracture.
After the fracture.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So is there a difference, like after the immobilization, the period after that, were any sort of trends as well?
They didn't report data. Yeah. Like they don't go within the 12 weeks. It's like,
questions? I was curious, 12 weeks. Because 6 weeks is usually considered sort of the optimal, you know, healing fracture period. It would seem to me that there'd be a lot of interest about whether the outcome at 6 weeks, because that's so frequently associated with sort of optimal healing times, whether there were differences in outcomes at that 6 week period.
There were.
Yeah, in our qualitative analysis, that's where we compared.
Yeah, yeah, so
the ones that did sort of present to have statistical significance at 6 weeks.
At 6 weeks, yeah.
It was very heterogeneous between the times that they measured it. So we tried to sort of lump it into those three that capture the most amount of.
Right. I mean, certainly we always want long-term, but I sort of think that that 6 weeks, you know, can we make any difference around that 6 weeks outcome?
Yeah. Some of the studies definitely did look at that 6 week time, but just some of them looked at 6 weeks, some of them looked at 1 to 3, either 6 weeks, 12 weeks, so that's why we chose those three time frames to lump them. And we didn't find enough that sort of focused on that 6 week time frame to report any.
That's interesting.
I was actually curious if any of the studies looked specifically at complex regional pain syndrome, or if that was just kind of included within the function or participation outcomes.
A few studies reported an adverse event of patients with complex regional pain syndrome, but none of them focused on things.
And did that happen more so, of the ones that reported it, do you remember if that more so in the early motion versus late motion, or did it just report it?
But just to add to that, just outside of this systematic review, from clinical experience and working with, in another assignment that we did, she definitely found over the 20 years of doing hand therapy that people that were immobilized for 6 weeks, there was a definite, she saw a correlation with grips, but didn't necessarily come up in the systematic review.
Very good. Well, thank you very much indeed.